Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. From Last Row Music, inside of the newsletter Brass Digest, an article on a new recording by the French Horn Jazz Project in tribute to French horn player Julius Watkins. The release, Julius Rides Again, became available on October 10th, 100 years after the birth of Watkins. French Horn Jazz Project Paul Malto Biasca collaborated with French horn player Giovanni Hoffer and notable musicians of the international jazz scene. For more information on the project, paomolto.com. And for more information on Last Row Music, lastrowmusic.com. At Birdland in New York City, the Lost in Harris Quartet performs tonight, November 25th, through Saturday, November 27th, in Birdland Theater. And the Birdland Big Band performs on Friday, November 26th. Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra performs on Sunday, November 28th, and the Joe Lovano and Dave Douglas Quintet, Sound Prince, perform November 30th through December 4th. All of these inside Birdland Jazz Club. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Jazz Stock in Kingston, New York, presents a 93rd birthday bash for vocalist and educator Sheila Jordan on Saturday, November 27th, with pianist Alan Broadbent and bassist Harvey S. For more information, jazzstock.com. Guitarist Miles Okazaki and drummer Dan Weiss, who have been playing in a duo setting for more than two decades, begin their Music for Drums and Guitar Tour in East Hampton, Massachusetts on December 1st as participants in the Pioneer Valley Jazz Shares, then on to Rochester, New York on December 2nd at Bop Shop Records, and then Dorchester, Massachusetts on December 4th at Mandorla Music inside of Peabody Hall, Parish of All Saints. For more information, milesokazaki.com and danweiss.net. And now for new releases. Out tomorrow, the Carn Davidson Nines, The History of Us on Three Pines. Other new releases, pianist Stephen Fetke and vocalist and trumpeter Benny Banach III's Seasons Swingin' Greetings on Cellar Music Group. Acute Inflections with their self-released single, Someday at Christmas. The Pete Elman Big Band's The 12 Grooves of Christmas on 1-2-3. Vibe's Jorge Rossi, bassist Robert Lanferman, and drummer Jeff Ballard's Huerta on ECM. Anthropoda with their single Azul on Tiny. And drummer Mike Pride's I Hate Work and Red Kite's Apophenian Bliss, both on Rare Noise. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. Thank you. My guests are two of the members of the Montreal Jazz Trio, pianist Steve Emerald and bassist Adrian Vidotti. Their self-titled release is on Odd Sound. So thank you both for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you very much for having
Thank
us.
Thank you very much.
Yes. So along with drummer Jim Doxus,
yes.
The trio was scheduled to celebrate its new release in Montreal at, and isn't it pronounced Dies Ones Live Jazz Bar. Did it happen?
Yes, we did that.
Yeah. Yes, How'd it go? Great.
October 2nd. It was a Saturday night, and we played the early part of the evening, right? Yes, we did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was during the Off Jazz Festival, which is the smaller jazz festival that happens in the fall in Montreal. And so there were a couple shows that night at Diazon. So yeah, we had a great sold out two shows at Diazon.
Beautiful.
Where we love to play. And it was a good night of music for us. Yeah, absolutely.
From Steve's website, it states that the Montreal Jazz Trio is a new group, but you've played together for 20 years. Was there a playing situation where the three of you looked up from your charts and said, we should just form our own group?
Yeah, there was actually. I had been living in Toronto for 4 years, and I moved back. I spent most of my adult life in Montreal, but I had I wanted a little change, so I moved to Toronto for 4 years, and then I moved back, and which is about 3 years ago now. And when I got back, I definitely wanted to put something together. And Jim and Adrian and I have been playing, like you said, for quite a while, not officially, like, you know, a group. And so we were playing at Upstairs, which is the other main jazz club here in Montreal. And Jim and Adrian host a jam session there every Monday, or used to. They're going to restart soon after the pandemic is placed. And so they had me as a guest for the jam session. We were playing a trio set. I recorded some of it. And it was like, it was really happening. I really enjoyed it. I thought we were playing really well together. And that's kind of what got it going, yeah. Really. It was that night. Not that it wouldn't have started anyway, but it was just kind of like, I think this should be a thing, you know?
Yeah, I remember actually, Steve, because you had recorded part of the evening, or maybe the whole first set. I can't remember, but I remember you said, check out My Romance.
Yeah.
That's and right. We had this really,
and Leaves.
Yeah, yeah, we had, you know, very standard tunes, and you said, listen to how we're playing on this, and you sent me the thing, and it was like, wow, okay,
yeah, that's what I want to do. I was like,
yeah,
that's what I had recorded it here just for myself, so I could look at my hands. I want to show my hands to make a video. Every once in a while, my big nose gets in the shot, but mainly it's my hands. And that was just a little thing for me to do with my new clip that I had bought, you know. And it's not that it was surprising that I liked it or that we liked it. It was just like, oh, you know, this sounds good. Let's do this.
It was a bit of a moment, though. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was. Yeah. That's true. Because I was trying to figure out when it would have been, but now that you mention it, there was this is something we could really do something here. And it's not like we went out the next day and got down to work. It was like it still evolved organically, and we did some gigs from there. And then actually, I think also the pandemic, all of us having a lot of time off, like an incredible amount of time off, like I've never had, you know, in the past 25 years.
Like we hope we never have again.
And exactly. That afforded us some time to get together regularly, which we did for, gosh, like at least 10 months, like every, let's
not
say. Not quite a year, but maybe like 10 months, like on Tuesdays, I think for a little while, it was like Tuesdays or Thursdays, we would get together in the afternoon and you know, at a certain point, take a break and have a coffee and then talk over some more stuff. And then we really played through a lot of material, and it ended up being, really formative, like in a way that, we had probably.
It did make a difference. Did make a difference because we none of us had any schedules, and we were getting together once a week to play. Mm-hmm. And it did give us a leg up, I think, had it we did. Not had that. Maybe one good thing about the pandemic, give us a little push, actually. Yeah.
Sometimes when you're running around, Cheryl, I mean, I know you must talk to lots of musicians. Sometimes you're just trying to fit in a little time for this certain project. And so you get this little window, but to have 10 months to just sort of let it simmer. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty special. And we just played last night, actually, we actually did another CD launch with Steve's brother, Greg, who's a guitar player. And we were playing last night. And so it's the same trio. It's the Greg Amir Quartet, but it has the Montreal Jazz Trio. And the minute we get into the trio part, it's a thing. Like we can't stop that now, right, Steve? You know what I mean? Like we get into our thing now, and it's really cool. It's a really, it's special. You know, it's nice when you get that connection with other musicians, and you get that kind of where you feel like you're kind of reaching something deep in the music that it's very fulfilling. Yeah.
It's not something that happens all the time either, you know.
No,
we end up working with a lot of different people, and even if they're great, or you know, even if you have a room full of great musicians, doesn't mean something good is always going to happen, but it doesn't necessarily mean it'll be something that, you know, really makes sense, because it's like personalities, you know. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, there's not always chemistry.
Exactly.
I got asked a question at a radio interview Adrian and I did last week, and they were talking about, you know, playing with like super well-known people and how amazing that must be. And my answer was, yes, it is. However, it's a wonderful experience, but those are usually, in my case anyway, they're usually one-offs. And it's not necessarily where you do your best work. You definitely try and rise to the whatever the level or whatever is happening, and most of us are quite competent and capable, but people are always dying to know who famous you played with, but it's not necessarily where the best music is being made. And I don't mean to take away from the opportunity to play with a really brilliant musician. That's always welcome, but I think I made my point.
You know, some of these folks can't even fold their own socks, so.
that's ringing a little bit true there. But anyway, yeah. Who folds their socks? That's what I want to know.
I do.
We were talking about this the other night at the bar. Last night at the bar, Adrian likes to have matching socks. I don't care.
I have all the same socks.
I put them all in the drawer. I don't what? Patch. I don't.
You don't put them together. Them. I do.
No, not often.
Are your socks all the same color?
Mine are.
No, his are. This is where we're going.
And I still put them together, but this way I don't have to find the match pair. They all match pairs. I have one pair of socks.
Whereas I wear different color socks a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Just because if they're the same brand, same type, and they are not the same color, I wear them. I don't care.
You two are frightening me now.
I don't know how we got to this socks.
This is the part, well, no, she said that, you know, sometimes million people can't fold their socks.
Yeah.
This is the part that she's going to edit out, Adrian. Just be like, oh, these Canadian guys talking about socks?
Are you kidding? This is gold. This stays. Your new self-titled release is on Odd Sound. It's based in Montreal, Canada, and founded as a nonprofit in 2013 by trumpeter Jacques Cuba Seguin. In recording with different producers in your careers, What are some of the contrasts in working with one who is a working musician?
Well, I'm going to just go ahead, Adrian. Mm-hmm. The thing is, oftentimes in the music world, the way it is now, maybe you know this, maybe you don't, I'm not sure, is that musicians self-produce themselves mostly. So in this case, we produced this record, the three of us. Odd Sound is a label that's got three musicians on the label, and they were looking to expand a little bit. So we basically produced and gave them a final project, and they're distributing for us, right? So they didn't produce it musically or otherwise. Like we did that. The old school thing where you get a deal on a record label and they make a producer, they get you to work with a producer. That's, I think, still happens, but I think it only happens in the big labels. Like if you worked for ECM, you'd have Manfred Eicher as your, producer, or Blue Note. I'm not sure who that'd be, but you know what I'm saying? Like we basically, for the most part, we produce our own music, and then bring it to the label and say, how can we work together? And it's great because I was very happy to get us on Odd Sound because it's they got good distribution and they're good guys. They know the business. And so it's more of a collaboration than it is a record deal, if you will.
Okay. So it's a shared vision.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean, we did the music first. We did the music, and then we were like, okay, we try and see if we can get somebody interested in it. And we went from there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it was because Jacques, great local trumpet player, he appreciated what we were doing musically. And so then it's like, it was very, Steve is mostly dealing with Jacques and Philippe, and he kept saying, oh yeah, these guys are great to work with. It's so easy. It's been really, so maybe in that sense, because they're working musicians, they don't have time to kind of, I guess there's no need for them to sort of feel the need to, maybe we should do this. Maybe we should do this. Maybe we should do this. They're sort of like, we love what you guys are doing. We need this, 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 and this from you. And then Steve can, we can deliver that kind of thing. And then
so, I think the piece of the pie that's missing is money to this conversation, right?
Yes.
Because if you're a label and you have money, which I think is almost an antiquated concept, and you say, we would like you to be on our label, we'll pay for it. Therefore, this is what we would like to do with you. And maybe right down to who you play with and right down to which songs you record and all that. That's not the case for us. And it's not the case for, I would say, most jazz musicians or most musicians, period. Yeah.
Thank you.
You play one of my favorite tunes on this release, the tune immortalized by vocalist and pianist Nat King Cole.
Oh, yeah.
And that tune is Answer Me, My Love.
Mm-hmm.
Another composition from the release is Ray, written in memory of Canadian jazz pianist Ray Downs. Who was he, and what was it about him and his music that inspired the writing of this tune?
Well, Ray was a great Canadian jazz pianist. He grew up in Toronto. He was born in 1931, and he grew up in Toronto in the 30s and 40s. And I'll try to give the quick summary, but he lived 89 years, so there's a lot to his life there. But it's interesting because he started taking piano lessons, and it turned out he had a great aptitude for the instrument and was actually studying classical music and won the first Dominion of Canada scholarship just around, like, near the end of World War II. He won this scholarship where he could have gone to Europe to study in Paris and London. And then his parents were like, let's just wait for the war to be over. And so he went after the war, and he was studying to be a concert pianist. And it was in his studies there that he started to get into jazz. And he really fell in love with it, came back to Canada, started applying himself, started working in Toronto in those years, which I guess would have been the like early 50s. In Toronto, and he was working a lot, and he was a really good pianist. And at a certain point, Oscar Peterson and Ray Brown and Ed Thigpen opened a school for 2 years in the 60s in Toronto, a jazz school. And Ray's trio went to that school, and he became a kind of acolyte of Oscar, and he played a lot. He played a lot in Toronto. So he lived in Toronto till the 90s and then moved to Montreal. And that's where I think Steve and I would have come into contact with them. For me, it was
the 90s. Yeah.
And he was a tough old man, you know, tough customer. But in the last 5 years of his life, I started playing with him, and kind of like with Steve, where we just would get together. In fact, a lot of times we were just playing duo. And so I just had a great relationship with him, and he passed in 2020, just before the start of the lockdown, you know, all these confinement measures and stuff, just before.
It was actually
March 17th. So I could still see him in palliative care, which was amazing. You know, so many people, they get to say goodbye to loved ones at that time, and just before he passed. And so we got to hang out. But so I wrote this tune quite quickly afterwards, and it really just has to do, it's really like my feeling of what it was like playing with him, you know. And when we play it with Steve and Jim, I always feel like if he could have heard it, he would have really dug it, you know. He would have been like, right on, guys, like, right on, you know. So it does make me happy. It's really a different kind of tune than I've written, but it comes from a very honest place, you know. So and the way Steve plays on it and Jim plays on it, it's exactly what it's supposed to be. So yeah, it's just a dedication to a good friend, you know.
Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Steve, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, not really. When we get to questions about that tune, since Adrian wrote it, I let him.
How about Answer Me, My Love? Why don't you talk about how that happened?
That was, we had played that only a few times. But we did like it. There was a vibe about it. We liked it. And I when we went to the studio, I had a list of tunes that we were going to record, that we had rehearsed and stuff. And I didn't have that on the list. And Adrian called it, and we did one take, and we liked it so much that we put it on the record.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had looked at it a bunch and found a way to play it that I liked. As the pianist, I have to organize, you know, the thing first and foremost, and then we figure out the rest of it. I don't know. Sometimes it just works that way. You know, it was the space was really nice. The way we played it really worked, and I was really happy with it. We all were happy with it.
Yeah.
But the tune itself, when I had heard Keith Jarrett had done a record, a solo record, maybe one of his last things, because sadly he can't play anymore because of his illness. And he was playing that tune on this solo record. And I'm like, I've heard that song before and I didn't know why. And then I just started doing research on it and found a bunch of vocal versions, Nat Cole being one of them. And I was like, yeah, it's a really gorgeous song. And we just started playing it. Really, that was it. I learned the lyric too, but I'm not singing these days. So, But well, yeah, it's a beautiful song. Yeah.
Gentlemen, there are a lot of trios out there. How do you distinguish yourself as the Montreal Jazz Trio?
Ooh, well, I mean, a lot of the music we're playing starts right over here. And I've had some of these tunes quasi-arranged, some in my head for a bunch of years, actually. And us getting together kind of forced me to finish these arrangements, all tunes that I love, but also, you know, trying to find the balance between arrangements and still honoring the tune is really important to me. Overarranging is no good. I don't like to listen to people who overarrange the songs or changing things too much. It's a really delicate balance to get it so you can play the tune, people know it's that tune, but it still sounds like it's your work, right? So that's what I'm trying to do over here. And so I bring the arrangements in because, again, as the pianist, I'm kind of like, in that sense, in charge of what, you know,
yeah, absolutely,
what we're going to start with. And then, of course, the personality of the bass player and the drummer have so much to do with how it sounds. We wanted it to be swing. We wanted to do mostly swing music on this record. And we wanted it to be a communication record where we interplay together. And, you know, I think the fact that we're friends has a lot to do with how we sound. Not, you know, our personalities, musical personalities, of course, are important. But I think that hanging out and playing together and wanting to work together makes it, you know, it's not something we put together for, you know, people put bands together to play the music of so-and-so for one night and then it never happens again, you know. It's not what we're trying to do with this. I'm not sure I'm answering the question, but.
No, you are, but.
I'm still talking.
The fact that you know Adrian's sock situation tells me that it tells me
nice callback. That's good. now I'm scared.
I'll say Cheryl. Also, I'll add. I think as a trio, we love a lot of those earlier swinging piano trios. And we also have a penchant for some of the more contemporary stuff that has happened. And then thirdly, I think we all value our own individual voices. And we actually have a little bit of chutzpah and feel like what we have to say is actually kind of important, even if it's for a smaller public than, you know, the Keith Jarrett Trio, for example, obviously, right? But yeah. So we feel like we have something to say, and we're actually really happy with the results, feel that, you know, the next one's going to be even better, you know. So that's kind of where we're at. Like, we just love this music. We love the jazz tradition, and but we're also living it. It's 2021, and we're trying to find, trying to keep evolved too. So with, I guess, one foot in the past and one foot in the future, a little bit, you know, like
I mean, I want the music to be, sorry, I guess I cut
Go. No,
I want
no.
the music to communicate. I want us to be interested in it. I want music students and people that are really on the inside of the music to be interested in it. However, I want, you know, people that are not necessarily diehard jazz fans to be able to listen to the music and enjoy mm-hmm. it, you know, not just music and the line between art for art's sake and music that can communicate without any kind of compromise is really the, I think it was Kenny Werner had a record once called Delicate Balance, you know, and that's the thing, you know, that's why, you know, we're playing some original music, but we're also playing some standards. We're not, you know, that was really what I wanted to do. Something that could kind of cover the spectrum of emotional to swinging to, you know what I mean? Without being a hodgepodge, just a sound that was, that people could relate to some point.
For more information on the Montreal Jazz Trio, you can find them at facebook.com/MJTSwing or steveamerald.com.
Grove Radio, brought to you by Canada's leading jazz publicity firm, features the latest and greatest in Canadian jazz. Join me, your host, Jenna Marie, in my quest to discover the recordings that have been shaping the Canadian jazz scene for the past decade and eavesdrop on interviews with established and emerging Canadian jazz stars. Impress your friends with exclusive behind-the-scenes scoops on upcoming releases by tuning in every single week. Orange Grove Radio plays on a variety of different radio stations across North America, so to tune in live, check our schedule at orangegrovepublicity.com. You can also listen to our episodes as podcasts on Mixcloud and Spotify by searching up Orange Grove Radio. If you want to join in on the conversation, ask us a question, or make some requests, you can do so by tweeting us at OG Publicity, and you can also follow us on social media on Instagram and Facebook at Orange Grove Publicity. I can't wait to introduce you to some incredible Canadian jazz and to play some of your absolute favorites. I'm Jenna Marie, and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye!
And now for some music.
Thank you.
From Danish guitarist Jakob Bro's release from earlier this year, Uma Elmo on ECM Records, we heard the piece Slara Fendland with Norwegian trumpeter Arve Henriksen and Spanish drummer Jorge Rossi. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with award-winning Montreal-based saxophonist, composer, and bandleader Beth McKenna. Her new self-released release is titled Beyond Here. So thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Thanks for having me.
Your self-released Beyond Here is a sextet. Would you mention the other five people in the group?
Yeah. So the other five are longtime collaborators and friends of mine. The first one is Guillaume Martineau, who's a pianist. He's actually classically trained, but then went to Berkeley and did his jazz studies there and then came back to Canada. So he's a longtime collaborator. I have Olivier Babaz on the bass, originally from France, now living in Montreal. Then I have François Jalbert on guitar. He's a Montrealer who plays everything from, you know, Django Reinhardt, gypsy jazz, to playing at Oceaga, playing with the huge, you know, headliner rock bands, to playing in my band. So he's one of the most versatile players in town. Then I have Sarah Rossi, she just finished her master's in jazz voice at McGill, but she's really more into, you know, contemporary rock fusion music. And then I also have Peter Colantonio on drums, who is an all-around fantastic player and has been a collaborator since our days back at McGill for well over 8 years now.
Okay. If these artists aren't all from Montreal, they're Canadians, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. In your opinion, is there a different jazz sensibility with players from other provinces and territories of Canada?
Very interesting. So I'm actually originally from Nova Scotia. So I am born and raised in the East Coast of Canada. I will say there's a different approach between provinces. I will say my drummer, Peter, was actually born and raised in Toronto. And the rest of my band is mostly from Montreal, with my bass player being originally from France, but living in Montreal for the past very long time. He's a Canadian resident now. But I would say there is a bit of a different approach. So between, you know, Toronto's kind of Toronto sound, as well as how my friends and colleagues back in Nova Scotia approach jazz and how it's approached in Montreal, there's a very different approach and very different schools of thought.
On your bio page, you've written that your compositional style is, quote, best described as jazz fusion, jazz rock, and cinematic jazz. you know, in listening to your release, you know, 1 minute I'm listening to a lovely lilting piece like Letting Go, and then this fuzzy, rockish interlude Human Malfunction.
Yes.
With financial support from the Canada Council for the Arts for Beyond Here, did they understand and support your explorations into jazz mixing with other genres of music, or did they just leave it to you to just create?
So when I applied for the grants, I applied and it was, I had to present some kind of demo material as well. And I'm best known in Montreal for kind of being that hybrid, thinking outside the box composer, in that I, at, you know, when I was at McGill, I did the whole Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, you know, bebop, swing era focus on my studies. And I can do that, but that wasn't what really spoke to me in the end. And then it was really towards the end of my studies where I really delved into Maria Schneider, and actually one of my mentors, Darcy James Argue. So I delved into his music, and that's what really kind of showed me that, you know what, jazz doesn't have to be inside the, you know, the swing, the bebop box, and that you can really have those modern influences, and you can really kind of use jazz more of like illustrating a picture, you know, telling a story. And that's what I tend to do, and really convey a message, emotions, try to open up discussion, open up thought, and create more of a an experience for listeners in the concert hall.
Yeah. I watched the second mini doc for Beyond Here that's titled Identity.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about working outside that metaphorical box and making your work, quote, feel like something that's mine.
Yeah.
You pull away from being a jazz musician. Do you find that designation confining? And it sounds like it does, just based on what you said.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I when I release my CD, I'm like, good luck to all the people in the record stores.
You mean trying to find a place to put it? Is it jazz? Is it this? Is it that?
It is. I do define it as the broader picture of jazz. And I kind of move towards, as I mentioned, cinematic jazz or jazz fusion or modern contemporary jazz is kind of how I best describe it if I have put in a kind of in a jazz genre. But the thing is that some of my favorite composers and favorite bands include stuff like Radiohead. Like, I'm a big fan of Radiohead, Snarky Puppy, you know, bands like that who are really thinking outside the box. And yes, there's a lot of, you know, there's, you can kind of play certain parts of music in jazz, but they pull from so many different influences and so many different genres. And that's kind of what I'm doing, is that I'm pulling a lot of different influences in my music. I have a lot of different tastes. I mean, when I was growing up, I had my dad was a big fan of Eric Clapton and Van Morrison, and like that was what was blasting around the house. And then they'd sometimes just like throw a jazz CD at me, and it was like, you know, Charlie Parker, or Miles Davis, or John Coltrane. I'm like, that's great. But then I was always more into like the funk, like off-brand funk. Shuffle Demons is one that I loved growing up. Like, there were so many other groups I was into, and it's always more that kind of breaking the barriers and doing something else approach.
As you call yourself an outlier.
Exactly. So yeah. I'm really one. I'm one that where, yes, I really enjoy, I know when I was at McGill, I had a master's student who was later a drummer in my combos at the school. And he was telling me that my music was cheesy. He said, your music is cheesy. And I'm like, and again, that was early, early, early days, because he was really more into like avant-garde jazz and bebop. And he's like, your music is cheesy. And I'm like, okay. And then that, I just kind of like kept it to myself from there. And then I was like, okay, it's cheesy. And I'm like, you know what? It's really what music, what I'm writing is what I feel most attached to and what I really feel most passionate about. And there's even moments in my big band album, in my most recent one, Home Montreal, that was in 2017, where I wrote this part at the end of Plateau Montréal or PMR. And when I wrote it, I'm like, oh, this is cheesy. Oh, this is really cheesy, but it could be, let's see, let's throw it in there and see what happens to the band. And it turns out to be one of my favorite parts of the album. And it's one of the most played by Canadian radio stations when we play it. It's like that track. And even like when we did it live at Montreal Jazz Fest, it was that part where I was just like, this feels amazing. So what is exactly cheese? It's really about saying, okay, you know what? I don't agree with you. I don't think this is cheese. This is what I'm feeling. And this is what I am creating. And this is what best connects to what I want to say.
You've also written on your page that, quote, inspirations for writing and composing come from personal life experiences, places, and impactful events.
Yes.
Ooh.
You want me to get, I'll get into that.
Yeah.
To talk about, I'll use three. So Tides on the most recent album. I'm from Nova Scotia. So of course I grew up on the ocean, pretty much on the, you know, the waterfront. I could see, for people who know geography around Nova Scotia, I could see PEI, Prince Edward Island, across the strait from my cottage. So I could see the next province over, you know, just... That's how much I was born and raised on the ocean. In my hometown, we had this pulp mill that was dumping effluent into the waters of my hometown. At the same time, now, 20 years later, we're realizing that we have higher rates of cancer. Higher rates of cancer, again, there's no direct correlation, but we have one of the highest per capita rates of cancer in Canada. No direct correlation, but there's speculation. That being said, what has happened since is that it was back in 2017, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. So with aggressive breast cancer. They caught it early and she survived. But that was part of Tides is the whole thought of really, you know, again, the impact that profitable corporations can have in dumping, in pollution, in and having the kind of the industrial effects of industrial profit on human quality of life. So that was one for Tides. Running Out was another one. Running Out was actually one where that one was influenced by the fact that we're kind of on a climate clock right now, being that, you know, we're seeing more drastic climate change and disasters and things like that. And scientists are saying that there is a point of no return, and we're getting close to that point of no return, but it's still avoidable. And Running Out is kind of it shifts through these weird time signatures in the first part and just kind of like wandering and meandering and trying to, you know, as if we're trying to make efforts towards changing it, but there's nothing concentrated together, focused globally. There's a Paris Accord, but again, not all the countries are in on that. So at the end, when it breaks into a piano solo and goes forward from there, that's really where it's the hope that we will find a concentrated effort to not destroy our planet before it's too late. And that's what Running Out is about. So, and then the third one was Streets of Mexico City, that I can talk about. That one was one where in my previous day job, because a lot of musicians have day jobs, in my previous day job, I was a university recruiter for an MBA program, and I'd go every year to Mexico City. Lima, Lima, Peru, Bogota, Colombia, and Sao Paulo, Brazil. Every time I was in Mexico City, I had the most time to go see and walk around and explore the city culturally. I noticed there that even though it's a developing world country, there was always American influences in the culture. So it was kind of a mix of Aztec, Mayan, Spanish, and American. And even though they were developing world, they were trying to keep their own culture, but they kept trying to embrace that American culture as well. So it's kind of that weird crossroads where you have your native culture and that you're also really, really grabbing American influences in there, and that us as North Americans are having impact way more than we think with our culture.
Was there a Starbucks on every corner?
There were quite a few Starbucks. Yeah. Not every corner, but there were quite a few. Yeah.
How did I guess?
Yep. Yeah.
You seem open to new collaborative opportunities and possibilities, judging from your call for such inquiries on your website. What opportunities and collaborations have come to you recently?
Yeah, so actually right now I'm working on the music for a new musical. I've been approached by a friend and longtime musical director. Well, he's not a band director, but he has been writing musicals in town. And he is writing a musical about Brendan Milner, who this is like a neuroscientist, a Canadian neuroscientist, who essentially it was related to exploring parts of the brain and kind of on how strokes affect our own whole well-being. Anyway, she's now the focal point of the show is now 103, still alive, has lived this incredible life, So because it kind of ventures through the 1930s and 40s and 50s and 60s, I was approached by him. He has a Canada Council grant as well. He's producing this new musical, and he has asked me to do all the music for it. So I'm working on a musical right now.
So who do you look forward to working with? You know, if you had that wish list.
Yeah. I had a wish list of who I could work with. I know actually I've worked already previously with Alan Menken from Disney. So I've worked with him already on. Yeah. I worked with him already. We did The Apprenticeship of Diddy Kravitz. This is a show that he wrote for way back in back in the day. I won't stick a year on it because I'm not exactly sure of the years. I don't want to falsely quote it, but they redid the show. They rewrote a bunch of the music, and they premiered it in Montreal back in 2016. Anyway, I was in the band for that show playing piccolo, flute, clarinet, alto sax. And it was on Ghostlight Records, and we played the cast album, and we did a six week run in Montreal, and I got to meet and work with Alan, which is amazing. So he would have been on my list. I think other ones, I've already worked with Darcy James Argue. I think like Remy LeBouf is one who I really admire his work. Yeah, he has his own big band in New York, so I really admire his music. He's one I'd want to work with. Another one would be Maria Schneider. I've interacted briefly with Maria, but Maria is one that I would also, I take a lot of influence from and I'd love to work with.
All right. This is where I like to give my guests the last word. If there's something I didn't ask you, something you'd like to let us know, an idea you'd like to express.
Yeah, I think right now this entire album is one about thinking about how our actions influence others. And again, it's for better or for worse. I mean, there's tracks on there like Divided to One, where I wrote that a couple years ago when North Korea and South Korea started having talks. And again, talking about how politics can affect families and can drive people apart and can separate, you know, long lost relationships and things like that, or reunite families together. I think really I think right now jazz should be really thinking outside the box. I think right now there's a lot of jazz that, you know, I think swing and things like that were done. I think that the jazz community is becoming more and more receptive to hybrids of jazz and fusions of jazz and new kind of subgenres of jazz. And I think that that's a really good direction that we're taking, that there's more and more openness to what the definition of jazz is.
For more information, bethmckenna.ca. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.